It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning November 17th, 2023. I'm delivering it from an un-American viewpoint, at least geographically, since I'm once again broadcasting from Ireland. From across the Atlantic, things can look very different. Some, of course, remain immutably the same. Israel's war on Hamas in the Gaza Strip still dominates the news. Here in Dublin, it's inevitable front-page news that Foreign Minister Michal Martin was off this week to the Middle East, just as his American counterpart, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, had gone before him. For several countries, such diplomacy was led by the topmost head of government for added symbolic effect. Joe Biden for the US, of course, plus the most senior leaders of other nations, including France, Germany, the UK, Holland, Greece, and Italy, have all made the trip. Essentially all of them, whatever their rank, have supported Israel. The key phrase being repeated is the Jewish state's right to defend itself from attackers like Hamas. While at the same time, the leaders were urging that humanitarian values somehow be adhered to, even while the determined Israeli onslaught in Gaza goes on. I should note about Foreign Minister Martin that he won a practical dividend during his trip. He was able to oversee the safe exit of a number of Irish citizens from Gaza. Overall in diplomacy, though, there is developing internationally a clear shift in publicly expressed positions, more obvious perhaps to the wider world than it is to many Americans. In the world's press, Western allies are seen more and more to be not completely following Washington's lead. Indeed, global political commentators, just like political leaders, are increasingly falling out of step with the Biden position. And that is reflected even inside the Biden administration, according to the New York Times, which reported on a letter of protest from 400 political appointees and civil servants. It represents, at the Times, growing internal dissent against U.S. support for the war. To the forefront, of course, is agitation for a ceasefire, as opposed to what has come about in part, Israel's eventual agreement to the tactical localized pauses, that's Israel's own term for them, that last for 4 hours in any given day and are supposed to facilitate humanitarian aid. On the ceasefire matter, a significant deviation away from America's line came most prominently from the French president, Emmanuel Macron. He chose to speak in English, perhaps tellingly, and via the BBC's World Service, saying that he was pressing upon Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu the crucial need for an actual ceasefire. Macron was careful in his phrasing, not wishing to depart too far from Biden, we can assume, but the shift was clear. "The situation is serious and getting worse each day," the president said. "We need a humanitarian pause and this was his new and independently French notion, and a push for a ceasefire. To put it bluntly, as many observers have, Washington is hemorrhaging influence globally. Across the rest of the world, the US appears more and more ethically questionable for giving its consent, however caveat-laden it may have been, to Israel's ground offensive in Gaza, which has choked civilian food supplies, water and power, as well as killing innumerable civilians. The so-called Global South has made its position clear. In the United Nations General Assembly, 120 countries supported the resolution calling for an end to hostilities in Gaza. Only 12 countries joined the US and Israel in voting against it. That number, 12 countries, is really worth considering for a moment. America is now only slightly less isolated than Russia was when in that same UN venue It was one of only seven nations opposing the overwhelming vote for an end to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Nevertheless, the Biden administration sticks to its big bear hug of Israel, supporting it wholeheartedly in public. "We are with Israel," were the president's words, "today, tomorrow, and always." All the while, it has to be said, White House officials are tactically letting reporters know off the record that the U.S. is insisting to its smaller ally that humanitarian concerns must prevail as much as they can. Given the international outrage over Netanyahu's ruthless Gaza onslaught, it's perhaps easy to forget there have been others in his coalition government who are more hardline than he is. There is, or rather was, the far-right Minister for Heritage, Amichai Eliyahu, who suggested dropping a nuclear bomb on Gaza, and also said that Israel should clear the enclave of all Palestinians. Eliyahu declared that instead the Arabs could all go to Ireland or to the desert. This odd-sounding solution went too far, it seems, and Netanyahu fired the minister. Eliyahu's reference to Ireland, I think, calls for some explanation. It certainly got a lot of coverage in Irish media. There was perhaps one small example of the general drift I was talking about earlier, away from America's line on Israel, when Ireland's president, Michael Higgins, whose largely ceremonial office requires him to generally stay aloof from political controversy, made a rare intervention. He was reported while speaking in Rome at a European meeting as saying that Israel was, and I quote, "creating a huge humanitarian crisis." These particular words of condemnation did not register resoundingly worldwide, it has to be said, but inevitably they did annoy the Israelis. Their ambassador in Dublin was instructed to complain. She said she was frustrated by the president's comments and accused him of trading in what she called misinformation. Ireland's actual head of government, though, as opposed to its formal head of state, the Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, or the Taoiseach in Irish, backed up his president, if a shade more diplomatically, saying that Israel's action, quote, "resembles something approaching revenge." So you see, in many Israeli minds, Ireland figures now as some sort of alien, hostile land. Hence the contemptuous consigning of Palestinians to Ireland or to the empty desert. The trouble is, for such dismissive Israelis, there's a wider worry, as I was noticing earlier while reviewing global coverage. The worry that this wave of maybe small countries is growing much bigger in their opposition to Israel's conduct of the war, however much global sympathy may have been expressed in the immediate wake of Hamas savagely attacking Israeli civilians 5 weeks ago. From across the water, our local Irish Sea, that is, came news of a change in personnel for Rishi Sunak's British government. It's what in English political headline writing is called a cabinet reshuffle. The big surprise was former Prime Minister David Cameron coming back into the cabinet as Foreign Secretary. Now, Cameron is obviously remembered for a colossally outstanding failure. He set in motion the UK's referendum on Brexit, expecting he would win it and thus keep Britain in Europe, but he lost it. I should say, though, that his reputation is redeemed in some Irish eyes by just one remarkable moment. As he addressed the UK Parliament in 2010, it fell to Cameron as Prime Minister to apologise, long after the event, for the 1972 murder by British troops of 14 unarmed protesters in the northern Irish city of Derry. That was the massacre which had become infamously known as Bloody Sunday, and in which I happened to be a survivor and eyewitness as a young reporter. "There is no doubt," Cameron announced to an utterly silent House of Commons, "there is nothing equivocal, there are no ambiguities. What happened on Bloody Sunday was both unjustified and unjustifiable. It was wrong. On behalf of our country, I am deeply sorry." That apology still stands out as an outrageously, tragically long-delayed piece of ordinary human decency by a government. Unusual words to be using, perhaps, in these times of so many purely self-seeking politicians in office. Cameron now takes charge of Britain's relations with Ireland. And it's significant that these two countries on either side of the Irish Sea are joint guarantors of the Good Friday Peace Agreement, which has, somewhat tenuously, kept the peace since 1998, along with the United States as the third guarantor. Cameron himself told reporters he is eager to help Prime Minister Sunak as they face what he called a daunting set of international challenges. Some Irish people are now hoping he might play a part in loosening the political logjam that has for the past 20 months paralysed government in Northern Ireland. But frankly, that is not high on the current agenda of any British politician in office. To quote a pithy opinion headline in the Irish Independent newspaper this week, "The British government reshuffle means, wait for it, more ignoring of Ireland." And what of British media's view of their own country's leadership as it faces its daunting set of international challenges? Prime Minister Sunak, fresh from assembling his new team, spoke at the traditional venue for laying out policy, the Lord Mayor's Banquet in London. From its no longer European isolation, Britain appears to many analysts as more wedded than ever to following behind America. After his grand banquet speech, the BBC reported straightforwardly on the Prime Minister's call for humanitarian law to be respected in Gaza and his dispatching of more food and medical aid for the enclave. The BBC newsreader, though, also pointedly said this, "But Mr. Sunak stopped short of calling for a ceasefire." That's all from the Media Beat in Ireland this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.